This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Neuroscientist Barbara Lipska has spent her life studying the brain and mental illness. She's the director of the Human Brain Collection Core Lab at the National Institute of Mental Health. Her focus has been primarily on schizophrenia. In 2015, though, Dr. Lipska didn't just study mental illness, she lived it. After having problems with her vision, Dr. Lipska underwent an emergency MRI, which showed multiple tumors from melanoma that had spread to her brain. While going through treatment, Dr. Lipska found herself sinking into a world of irritation, confusion, and paranoia. As she puts it, she lost her mind. In fact, that's the title of her book, The Neuroscientist Who Lost Her Mind. Dr. Lipska is now in the studio with us to talk about this. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So your book recounts several harrowing stories from when you were undergoing treatment for melanoma in 2015. And you open the book with the story of going for a run and how that was different from other times for you. Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, so maybe I will start with saying that I'm an athlete also. So I run every day, and I've been running every day for decades. So that particular day, June 2015, I went for a run, but unusually so, I decided to color my hair before going for a run. I put a dye in my hair, I put a plastic cap on top of it, and I didn't dress appropriately for that neighborhood. I was wearing very skimpy top, but it didn't bother me. I went running, and I couldn't find my home. I couldn't find my way back. So I was running for about 2 hours. By that time, the color of my hair changed into blackish rivulets that were dripping down my shirt, down my neck. Plastic bag, you can imagine.
Around your head.
Dried. Around my head, dried. I looked not quite like myself. Hmm. But it didn't bother me.
It didn't. So no. you finally get lost. You finally make it home after 2 hours. There you are in these skimpy clothes, covered in hair dye with a dry plastic bag on your head. Your husband sees you.
And he gasps. He asks, "What happened?" And I said, "Nothing. I actually caught an image of myself in the mirror, and I didn't think much of it."
You tell these stories in the book that you lost your memory at times. You became agitated with loved ones. You forgot where you were driving, where to park, how to use your phone, how to cook. You didn't know that they were a problem. Now, as we said in the beginning, you're a neuroscientist. So if you can't realize that it's a problem, what does that say for the rest
of people? So what the problem was that I lost insight into my own actions. And that's a characteristic feature, losing your insight. Of many mental disorders. People with schizophrenia often do not realize they are ill. I had the feeling that everybody around me changed, but I remained the same. And I stopped understanding the world around me. I thought everything is weird. People are acting against me. They are plotting and scheming against me. They want to kill me by using toxic sprays or stuffing pizza with plastic, for instance.
And it didn't occur to you that this...
Not at all.
Huh.
And why didn't it occur to me? My brain was very swollen. We figured out after this period of about 2 months when I was acting so weirdly. And I lost function of the frontal cortex. Mm-hmm. Frontal cortex is the part of the brain right behind our forehead.
And what does that govern? Like, what does
it governs all the higher cognitive functions, including insight, empathy, emotions, short-term memory, all these features that I lost. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't realize, being a neuroscientist and knowing how frontal cortex works, I couldn't realize that mine didn't work because it didn't work. So it was a catch-22 situation.
Right.
I didn't have part of the brain that would make me aware of the problem.
Right. So would what you experienced be similar to what someone with schizophrenia experiences?
Some symptoms, definitely so. Mm. So loss of emotion, loss of memory, loss of empathy, loss of inhibition. This running with not appropriately dressed in my neighborhood is I didn't have any inhibition. I would shower without pulling down the blinds. I just didn't think about it.
Right. It didn't bother you.
It didn't bother me.
Before we get into sort of the mental illness implications, what about your loved ones who saw you behaving completely differently than they were used to? What did they do and what did they think?
They were terrified, but it happened later. At the beginning, they thought I am very stressed out. They were stressed out. I was handed a death sentence, being diagnosed with metastatic melanoma and having brain tumors. It was a death sentence. I was given about 4 to 7 months to live. Mm. So it was not that surprising that I behaved not like myself. But they didn't realize until they did, which was 2 months later, that something much more serious is going on in my brain.
And then they had to tell you the stories of some of the things that happened, because not only did you not have the insight at the time, you then, when you did gain some clarity, didn't have the memory to be able to recall exactly what had happened during that time.
That's right. Although I do remember facts. I remember running in the street. I remember putting color in my hair. But I did not remember anything about emotions attached to these actions. I did not have emotions, and I didn't read on emotions. Mm. So there was nothing basically to remember for me.
It's an incredible experience, isn't it, to go through something like this and come out of it and be able to talk about it. What does it tell all of us about mental illness, do you think?
I realized, I got the first-hand experience that mental illness is a brain disease. It is like any other illness, like heart disease or kidney disease. It's just located in the brain. In my case, my brain stopped functioning because I had brain tumors. In other people with mental illness, there are much more subtle changes that are happening.
Where do you think we are in terms of understanding brain diseases? Certainly better than we were, but, you know, if we could have an effective system and that was 100%, are we at 10? Are we at 5? Where do you think? Are we at 50?
I think even less than 5.
Less than 5?
Yeah. We didn't have until very recently technologies to study the brain. Mm. Human genome was sequenced in 2003. Mm. So it is only 15 years that we know the letters in the human genome. We have no doubt that mental illnesses are genetic disorders, not only in terms that they're hereditary, but they have to do with genes. Mm. To study genes, how they function in the brain, we have to understand the genome and we have to understand the function of these genes.
In the book, and you talked about this, being an athlete, physical fitness was important, athletic competitions. In your 60s, you were cycling to work 20 miles a day.
I did. 20 miles one way, 40 miles round trip. Oof. I don't do it anymore. I lost my vision in the left eye because of radiation, necrotic changes in my brain. I'm not the same person, but I do cycle. It's not that I cycle so far. Did it help me is your question, probably. Did it help me?
Well, no, not so much did it help you, but I wonder how that competitive drive sort of affected the way that you dealt with all of this. Because in the book, it's evident, but to those people who aren't reading the book, I wonder how that competitive spirit was a positive thing or maybe was an obstacle sometimes.
I think it was positive altogether. It might have been very difficult for my families because I am the one, you know, very strong-willed and perhaps often, I would say sometimes, but I have to say often, order them around.
You're honest.
But it helped me survive. I thought I was training for races. I was doing triathlons. I was preparing for an Ironman when all this happened. And it turned out that I was preparing for my own survival.
And you're still undergoing, you're still at least being observed, right? I mean, where does your treatment stand right now?
So in January, I had one small lesion found, new one. And it was radiated here in Boston in Brigham and Women Hospital. I am now being observed, so I'll have some tests tomorrow, scans, CT and brain scans, and we'll see where I stand. If nothing new appeared, I'll be good for another 2 months for another scan. It's a chronic disease, I'm being told. Mm-hmm. I'm not cured.
What advice do you give not only people who may be going through something similar, but their loved ones?
It is very difficult because a patient with a mental illness or brain tumors, which may result in symptoms of mental illness, is not exactly the easiest patient. It's very difficult to deal with it. I feel horrified what I did to my family, and I apologize many times, and I apologize over and over. But it's not my fault, and mentally ill people should also understand it, or their families, that it's not their fault. It's not the matter of their bad will or weak willpower. It's just like any other illness. Nobody wants to be ill. No one. I thought it's something to share with everybody else because I know that so many people are mentally ill. One in five in this country and around the globe have some kind of mental illness. I wanted to spread this message that it is a brain disease. Don't make patients feel guilty. It's not their fault.
Well, neuroscientist Dr. Barbara Lipska, her new book is titled The Neuroscientist Who Lost Her Mind. She'll be reading from her book tonight at 7 at the Harvard Bookstore in Cambridge. Dr. Lipska, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
And that's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Jamie Bologna and Chris Satorik with help from Zoe Mitchell, Amy Pollard, and Cassandra Sunt. Tim Skog is our technical director. We had engineering help today from Eddie Mazulis. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hati. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.